I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host. Well, you know, actually, I am Harry Markopoulos. Have you ever heard of this guy? Familiar with that name? Harry Markopoulos was the guy who blew the whistle on the Bernie Madoff scandal. I'll read a little bit about him, explain to you why I am Harry Markopoulos. He's also seems to be, it appears he could be somewhere on the spectrum. Probably one of these kind of financial geniuses that can see, what is it, a beautiful mind. Could look at probably a spreadsheet or a P&L. He could look at the returns of the Madoff thing, and instantly, he said within 5 minutes, he could tell that the Bernie Madoff's investment style was a scam. And if you ever see this guy, Harry Markopoulos, he's kind of socially awkward. I've seen some interviews with him. He seems angry. He doesn't seem to have good a good way with people. So maybe I'm describing myself more and more. I don't know. Harry Markopoulos is a financial expert who's deeply skeptical of large organizations and of people in general. He discovered Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme. He has a very low threshold for doubt. Consequently, his trigger point is extremely sensitive. Harry Markopoulos went to the SEC with what he believed to be a foolproof argument against Bernie Madoff in 2000, 2001, 2005, 2007, and 2008. The story said if they had acted on his tips and conducted a thorough enough investigation to reach the trigger point, Madoff could have been stopped with only $7 billion as opposed to the $50 billion he had stolen by 2009. And so this is what's interesting to me about this character, this Harry Markopoulos. As I say, I am Harry Markopoulos now. Nobody believed him. He was ignored for years until the con was finally revealed. He went to the SEC on Bernie Madoff in 2000, 2001, 2005, 2007, and 2008. Obviously, the financial crisis is what triggered the redemptions that spelled the end for Bernie Madoff's fund. People were having to sell just about everything heading into the Great Recession. And so, as I think it's the thug, what's his name? Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett said, when the tide goes out, you can tell who's naked. Bernie Madoff was buck naked. And so when the redemptions came, he did not have enough money left in the fund to redeem everybody's requests. But this Harry Markopoulos guy, he was dismissed. He was ridiculed. People refused to believe that Madoff was running a Ponzi scheme. Now, I think his personal style had something to do with that, and this may be another similarity that I share with Harry Markopoulos. Sometimes he was kind of a serious and intense guy, but he had the courage of the convictions, and we should remember that he tried to warn everybody, looks like 9 years at least, and repeatedly during those 9 years of what was coming on. It turns out I was actually watching, to be honest with you, I thought about him this weekend. Just, I don't know, I come at things very differently than most people, and I stand alone on an island, and I feel that I'm here to point out some things that people should consider, basically kind of a warning about some political affiliations out there. I smell a rat, so I'm going to speak to it. It turns out most of the people who dismissed Harry Markopoulos were on Wall Street with the bank. So what I started to say was I pulled up some videos of him trying to find out how to pronounce his name. So I ran across a couple of interviews that were actually kind of interesting that he had done around 2011. And what he explained was a lot of the people that he went to explain the Bernie Madoff scheme didn't want to listen to him because they were banks that were making a ton of money off of Bernie Madoff. You know, Madoff had these billions of dollars. They were in certain places. There were also people who were what you call feeder funds. There were people out there raising money, trying to attract investors, and they were passing these investors off to Bernie Madoff, and Bernie Madoff would pay them a huge finder's fee. Obviously, you can pay a huge finder's fee if the money that's coming in is basically Bernie Madoff assumed it was kind of essentially his own money. And as the Ponzi scheme got worse, as it got bigger, and then the redemptions came, Bernie Madoff had to offer more money to the people who would bring him money, because he needed to start filling the holes that were developing in his scheme. So there were a lot of the big banks. I can't remember if it was J.P. Morgan or who the biggest banks were, where he had billions of dollars sitting in their accounts. And, you know, this is what banks like. They like you to have your money in their accounts. So there were a lot of people on Wall Street that were making a ton of money off of Bernie Madoff, and they just didn't want to hear that it was a Ponzi scheme. Now, I kind of get that. It's a shame for the investors, but we should all know by now that Wall Street does not have your best interest at heart. They have their best interest at heart. If we haven't learned that over the past 20 years, I'm not really sure what lessons we're capable of learning. You know, if you are making a lot of money off a situation like this, why upset the apple cart? And it was probably some cognitive dissonance with the banks where this Markopoulos character would go to him and go, look, there's just no way he's doing this. I can prove it to you. And he was doing it mathematically. And these banks refused to hear it. The regulators refused to hear it. If you've seen any of the documentaries or the movies about Bernie Madoff, the SEC went in and set up in an office in there and shuffled papers around for a while, acting like they were investigating Bernie Madoff, and then as they were leaving, a lot of the SEC investigators were actually handing resumes to Bernie Madoff. Hey, if you need anybody. That is the revolving door, the regulatory capture that we have here in this country, where all of these SEC investigators who are making about $68,000 a person were sitting in these luxurious Bernie Madoff offices realizing, hey, if I let this guy off the hook, if I don't look too hard and buddy up with this guy, maybe I can get $250,000, $500,000 a year if I play ball. So the SEC had set up in Bernie Madoff's offices for weeks sometimes to investigate him, and they came away with nothing. This Harry Markopoulos guy found it in 5 minutes. But I get how people can, who have a vested interest in these things, might be able to look the other way, that you can wrestle and justify a lot of things in your brain if you are personally benefiting. If you're on the take, if you are one of these banks making millions and millions of dollars off of parking Bernie Madoff's assets, if you're one of these guys who is feeding Bernie Madoff money, you're attracting investors and handing them off, investing their money in the feeder funds that Bernie Madoff has, and you're getting big fat commissions every time you do it, I can understand that. It's not right. It's a shame. It wrecked a lot of lives. People who attracted money in, then handed it over to Madoff for him to lose it all, steal it all, essentially. It's still disgusting, but at least I'm in touch with the emotion that says, hey, I'm making a ton of money off this. Last thing I want to hear is that this is a Ponzi scheme. That can't be right. Bernie Madoff's been, you know, he was the head of the NASDAQ at one point. It's gross, but I can understand people kind of twisting around in their head mentally, not wanting to kill the golden calf. In that scenario, what I don't get is people who have absolutely no benefit whatsoever. They get absolutely nothing. And yet they will carry water for this side or that side or this person or that person when it doesn't benefit you at all. This is really where I find myself trying to figure out human nature. So we'll get into some of the stories, some of my Harry Markopoulos reporting on some of these stories in just a second. First, I'll get to my quote of the day. This is from Gandhi. And I like this quote, but I'm going to qualify it a little bit. Gandhi said, many people, especially ignorant people, want to punish you for speaking the truth, for being correct, for being you. Never apologize for being correct or for being years ahead of your time. More about that later. If you're right and you know it, speak your mind. Speak your mind. Even if you are a minority of one, the truth is still the truth. Now, what we're going to cover today is my opinion. I do not know if it's the truth. I don't know if I'm being correct. But I am going to be this army of one, this minority of one, who points out things that I think are glaringly obvious, and everybody can take it and do with it what they will. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
All right, welcome back to the Harry Markopoulos Show. Now, I am not actually Harry Markopoulos. I tell you, the reason I say that is because I've seen this guy in interviews. He's a very intense guy. I don't want him suing me. He feels like the kind of guy who could just get wind that I used his name as my own, and he would sue me. I do not represent Harry Markopoulos in any way, shape, or form. I am just saying this is a man who tried to warn people about the Bernie Sanders scam, the con, for 9 years. Ultimately, he was kind of lifted up on people's shoulders. He got a 60-minute segment and all that stuff. I don't expect the same fate, but it's really about warnings. And to me, I don't have the brilliant, beautiful mind of a Harry Markopoulos, but I think I've got gut instincts, and they are not hampered. See, I think a lot of us have gut instincts, but when you get into things like politics or patriotism, things like this, they cloud that. There's a very interesting book written by Malcolm Gladwell called Blink. I encourage everybody to read it. It helped my poker game. And essentially it is that your first thought is your best thought, that we have some kind of natural intuition to be able to read a scene and know what we need to do or decipher something. What happens is immediately after this initial thought, we start justifying why maybe it's not what we think. The reason this helped with my poker game was that a lot of times if you're playing poker, and you make a bet, and somebody either re-raises you, or they call, or you're trying to suss out exactly what their hand is. And if you can pay attention to that very first impression that you get on it, and don't cloud it with the fact that, you know, well, I've got to make a big bet on this. I could lose a lot of money if I'm wrong. You start equivocating. The monkey mind starts going crazy. But it's that first gut instinct. I tried with poker to use that first gut instinct, and I'm telling you, I was probably right about 80% of the time. It's very difficult to do because those other thoughts, you get your first gut impression that the guy raising you is just full of crap trying to scare you off of a hand. Boom, you just call immediately. You find out he has nothing, you win the hand. But the other side of your brain that tries to get you to not do those things, it floods in fast. I'm talking about milliseconds. So you have to kind of tune yourself to understand your gut instinct. I do not have any special mathematical knowledge, any algorithms to suss out some of the scams that I see. I just get a gut feeling, and then I do a little bit of research, and it usually reinforces my gut feeling. It's about warnings of when I believe people are being scammed. And I've got a pretty long record of this, and I think my record's fairly good so far. I don't know how many people Trump put into his administration that I had objections to and warned people about from the day they were announced, even as consideration, from Christopher Wray to John Bolton to William Barr, to any of these guys. The Eli Lilly guy he had at Health and Human Services, and at the end of the Trump term, what were we doing? Oh, we were selling pharmaceuticals, weren't we? And so, you know, I mean, I think my record's fairly decent. Sure, I've been wrong about other things. I didn't think Russia was going to go into Ukraine. Turns out I really just didn't. I didn't totally understand that situation. Now I completely get why they did. I don't approve of it. I don't think that they should have. I think this is a disaster for a lot of different people, but I get it, but I was wrong. So I certainly get things wrong as well, but there's just things, you know, you get that gut instinct. I'm telling you, I smell a rat. I was talking on Friday, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this today, But I was talking on Friday or last week after the Mar-a-Lago raid that it just felt like this was, I mean, I don't think that Trump set it up, but I do feel like maybe he set a trap. And I think people got mad at me because there's a lot of pearl clutching going on right now with Trump supporters about this Mar-a-Lago raid. And even though the media reported on it, and I'm loath to repeat anything that the media actually says because they're so chronically dishonest and wrong, I did see even within people that I knew saying that this was the kind of thing that would lead to civil war. I'm warning you against that. This feels like a trap in that way as well. I said at the time, I said, this is absolutely perfect for Trump. This is fantastic for him. Maybe he didn't orchestrate it, but I got to tell you, I bet he loves it. No better way to launch your campaign to get your base back on your side for the few that some people had left, get you back on their side than for the deep state to come after Donald Trump. I ran across this story this weekend. Former President Donald Trump was, quote, very upbeat, unquote, in the wake of the FBI raid on his home, according to Republican lawmakers who met with him on August 9th. I bet he is. I don't know if he set this thing up or if he baited them into it. I think it was absolutely, you know, the funny thing is, I think people get really upset with me about my criticisms of Donald Trump. I'm actually kind of complimenting him here. I believe he actually carried off something. He's also going to use this to great fundraising. He's already done that. People have forwarded me the fundraising emails off of this thing. And so I'm telling you, before you clutch your pearls and act out, because that's exactly what they want. There were several stories. Armed supporters of former President Donald Trump protested outside the FBI office in Phoenix on Saturday. Protest, which took place in the morning, follows the agency's raid of Trump's Mar-a-Lago property on Monday. Outside the FBI office, CNN reported that Trump supporters were carrying handgun and, of course, quote, assault-style weapons. One protester said they were there to protest the unlawful search at the Florida property. Fox 10 Phoenix reported that one person waved a Confederate flag and others held honor your oath and abolish the FBI signs. Now, my point has been, since I've been on here, there have been plenty of reasons to oppose big government actions like this. I have been speaking since the day it started of the persecution of Julian Assange. They didn't just raid Julian Assange's home while he was in another one of his mansions. No, they grabbed him up, threw him into a dungeon, essentially, and they've been trying to slow kill him ever since. So it's a little difficult for me to get worked up about the FBI doing what the FBI does, as political as this is. Here is another one. I'm just, again, this is my Harry Markopoulos warning to you for all the civil warriors out there who are ready to kick something off because they invaded your guys' Mar-a-Lago Palm Beach mansion. As I said, look, I get it when people are making a lot of money off of something. Really, you know, either wanting to look the other way or decipher it a certain way because you're getting paid. But when you're not even getting paid to risk everything over something that is only benefiting other people, it's just bizarre to me.
This morning, the investigation into Ricky Schiffer, the man authorities say tried to breach the FBI Cincinnati field office, is focusing on social media posts apparently linked to Schiffer that called for violence in the days after the FBI search at Mar-a-Lago. ABC News has reviewed a series of recent posts to accounts believed to be Schiffer's on former President Trump's social network, Truth Social. The posts call for war and for FBI agents to be killed on sight. In one post yesterday, Schiffer appeared to detail his failed attempt to enter the FBI office, writing, "It is true. I tried attacking the FBI." Previous social media posts also claim he was present at the U.S. Capitol during the January 6th riot and reportedly mentioned the Proud Boys.
Of course.
Authorities say just after 9 a.m. yesterday, Schiffer, dressed in body armor with an AR-15 and a nail gun, tried to break into the visitor screening facility.
He was unsuccessful and he fled that area.
He then fled 60 miles down a highway in a Ford Crown Victoria.
They're following a car for the FBI, so there are about 7 units, I believe, on the car.
Officials were in pursuit when they say the suspect opened fire from his car. Officers managed to corner the suspect in the cornfield. They say they fatally shot him after he raised a gun towards officers. The chaos coming just 24 hours after the FBI director was asked if he was worried about the violence in the wake of the Mar-a-Lago search.
Now, obviously, the media is going to point these things out as much as they can, and this is really my point. I don't know who's easier to provoke, the Trump supporters or the left. Both of them seem to be on a hair trigger of all these things. This is largely created by the ruling political class and our media. People always can kind of esoterically understand the concept of divide and conquer. They just can't see when they are being divided and conquered. So there were story after story of this. There was another guy. Now, he might have been going after the Supreme Court. He might have been some left-wing guy. Of course, they've ascribed no motives to him, so he must be a lefty, because they'll never tell you that a lefty had motives to attack the government. Somebody that busted into the Capitol grounds security, got out of the car, started just shooting around the place, not at anybody in particular, and then killed himself. Nobody was hurt. Officers didn't even fire on him. But another activity there. I'm just saying. All of the activity here, to be honest with you, Trump's been back in the headlines for about 2 weeks. I talked about his first speech back in D.C., and I played some clips of it that I know nobody, I haven't heard a single person comment on that thing, and it was just stunning to me. He wants stop and frisk, and he consulted with Xi, President Xi, the communist dictator of China, about how to handle the war on drugs here in the United States. He was very impressed with the fact that the communist Chinese government, with their incredible police state full of surveillance and slaves and no human rights whatsoever in China. He's so impressed with the way that they control their drugs there. I played these clips from his speech. Donald Trump's been back on the scene for 2 weeks. I tell you what, I'm already exhausted. And I would imagine listeners to the show might be as well. I'm just telling you, much like Harry Markopoulos was trying to warn everybody, I am trying to warn everybody. I smell a pretty conscious divide and conquer act going on right now. Whether it's prompted by the people in the FBI who just wanted to rile up Trump supporters, very real possibility. Whether it was Donald Trump participating in this little play or encouraging it or baiting it, knowing that it would swell his popularity. The bottom line is that what's happening is ordinary people out there, much like on January 6th, are going to be put under the boot of this government. The people protesting at the FBI offices armed. The guy who goes in to try to attack an FBI office, it's going to be the little people who take it on the chin while the people at the top enjoy their divide and conquer. I'm just warning you. When I come back, I wanted to talk about our own Josh West here at WYEB had turned me on to a little documentary, and I don't think I've covered it. I've had it to cover for several days now. It's called Berlin Sin City. It's on YouTube. It seems like it was written for today. There's some very interesting parallels between what took place in 1920s Germany and what's taking place right now, all the way down to the sexual perversion stuff. It was very odd. I was unaware of this. I always love learning things. But I'll tell you a little bit about what was taking place in 1920s Germany compared to what's happening right now. And unfortunately, where that could possibly lead us, we know what happened after 1920s Germany. 1930s Germany.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. So I really recommend this. It's on YouTube. It's about an hour long. Because I found this kind of fascinating. You know, I really thought that a lot of the stuff that we're seeing now was kind of an evolution, particularly a woke culture. You know, it really feels like when did the wokeness begin? About 10 years ago, 7 years ago, something like that. It seemed like we started really losing our minds. This is when we started saying there are more than two sexes and just some really bizarre stuff. What felt like really the promotion of transgenderism. This stuff it certainly has been very intense for the last few years, maybe 10 years ago. You know, it's been said, you look at Barack Obama, who campaigned against same-sex marriage. I mean, it wasn't a platform that he was on necessarily, but he wasn't for it. Hillary Clinton wasn't for it. So, you know, the Democrat Party in particular really has taken this weird, weird turn within very recent history. And it feels like this evolution of kind of weirdness. Now, I ascribe a lot of this stuff to the fact that society, particularly economically, is kind of falling apart. People are under a great deal of stress in their day-to-day lives, and this manifests its way in violence and riots and racial things. I believe at the root of all this has been the hollowing out of the middle class, because you really don't have a lot of people out there protesting, acting for, asking for drastic changes to a society when everybody's doing well. When you have a prosperous country where most people are being productive and working and living that American dream, you don't have time to go out and look for things to be outraged about. And I think we're on a hair trigger because they have spent the last 50, 60 years hollowing out the middle class and making life tremendously harder for people. That's a whole show unto itself, but I wanted to talk about this because this Berlin Sin City, again, it's on YouTube, and that's the title of it, Berlin Sin City, was very interesting because what it was about was 1920s Germany. And if you understand 1920s Germany, this is post-World War I. And what happened after World War I was that as Germany was defeated in World War I, they were saddled with horrible reparations, and really just they started printing up money, and it ended up being the Weimar Republic days of carrying a wheelbarrow full of cash to go buy a loaf of bread. Now, we're not there yet, but they were having these kinds of financial problems. But what this Berlin Sin City was really about, as it kind of gives away the name, is that it turned into kind of the sexual playground for everything you could possibly imagine in 1920s Germany. Now, I don't know what your impression of the German people is. I never felt I never felt like they were this freewheeling, free love for everybody, tolerant society. I mean, maybe this is still, they feel a little they feel a little uptight to me, the Germans. Maybe this is undeserved. But in the 1920s, they were they had several of their stars, the biggest people in their society at the time, as their economy was collapsing after World War I. A lot of their stars came out as gay, most particularly lesbians, but also, you know, homosexual men. And this took over the city to the point where this was the place the world would go to if they wanted to indulge any kind of perversion they could possibly have. Economics was so bad that people were turning their homes into brothels. And tourists could come in, or I guess even native Germans who actually still had some money, could go in, and the father of a family might pimp out his wife and daughter and or both. They said there was one street where if you wanted to, it's a family show, but it was just bizarre. If you wanted to be with a woman who was expecting a child, already pregnant, there was a street you could go down for that particular purpose. And every block of this street, they were in a different month of gestation. You could pick which one you wanted. This is just absolutely, it was bizarre. Because this wokeness, this weirdness, this transgenderism was out there in 1920s Germany and being promulgated to the children back then too. Is it a coincidence that these kinds of things happen kind of at the end of an empire as things are falling apart? I tried to draw some parallels to the Roman Empire too. Started looking a little bit of Roman history because we know some of the tales of homosexuality during Roman times, but it didn't really feel like that might have been a kind of a consistent thread throughout the Roman Empire, that men who took advantage of other men, it was showing their dominance, which is odd enough, but this Berlin Sin City was just very interesting to see their complete societal breakdown. At a time, they were having an economic breakdown after the war. It was a lot of drinking, a lot of drugs, a lot of real strange perversions. Some of the biggest celebrities of the time back in 1920s Germany were pushing gay sex. The children were being inundated with this stuff as well. Marlene Dietrich was the only name that I recognized. I think She was forced after Hitler rose. Hitler hated Berlin in the way that it had become. That is going to lead me into my next point. I didn't know until I'd seen this documentary that apparently Hitler rose to power from all of the, you know, the suburbs, from the rural areas, and he was really hell-bent on cleaning up Berlin. He hated what was going on in Berlin. Now, there's obviously, there are suspicions that Adolf Hitler himself was a self-hating pervert himself. But he hated the debauchery that was going on in Berlin, and he rose to power from the outside areas and then brought his power to Berlin and cracked down on them pretty hard. Marlene Dietrich. She and a lot of these other performers who had come out as very openly gay and were doing very risque shows. I mean, their shows were just full of basically pornography, a whole lot of nudity, but some of them were even basically pornographic things, and this was the culture of 1920s Berlin. Now, I found the parallels to that to be interesting to what we're seeing now, because I believe a lot of what we're seeing now has its roots in economics here in this country, as odd a leap as that feels like to some people. But I believe when you have people who are struggling just to kind of keep their heads above water to find some fairness in this world, they find victim classes. They congregate in groups, weird groups, to find safety in these things. And I think that that's what we're seeing right now. Now, as concerning as it is, or interesting, maybe interesting to know that the 1920s Germany went through really a lot of what we're going through right now, is the concern over what comes next. Because we're seeing things now that are just intolerable for a lot of citizens, especially people who see this grooming effort by particularly the transsexuals, and more about that later. I'm going to get next hour into some of the stuff that's coming out, some of the statistics around the shots. The fact that I was just listening to several different stories over the course of a weekend. I don't know if people understand the number of vaccinations that they have lined up for you now, and I'm not talking about just COVID. We are seeing a lot of other diseases pop up. I touched on it a little bit on Friday. I'm going to flesh it out a little bit today. Is it a coincidence that we're suddenly seeing all these odd diseases pop up? Monkeypox, polio, AIDS? These things are on the rise. Is that a coincidence with this new experimental gene therapy we've been doing? But anyway, the number of shots they have coming for you, and if I were in the gay community, I'd have some concerns of what their plans are for you. But the question is, so there's a lot of objectionable things going on right now, the grooming of the children, just some of the bizarre gender stuff that's taking place right now, and so everybody's looking for a savior. Well, that was what a lot of people in 1920s Germany were looking for as well. Now, I'm not saying that Trump is some kind of a Hitlerian figure, but he does have that kind of sway over people. And the issue that I have, and why I'm kind of going back to my Harry Markopoulos kind of warning you over what's going on, after I heard Trump talk about rolling out a communist Chinese death camps for drug dealers and stop and frisk, he's going on pretty hard on authoritarian to address the problems that we have right now that a lot of people find objectionable. I do too. Nobody wants to see the crime that's happening in the streets right now. Absolutely not. Libertarians believe if you hurt somebody or you take their stuff, you get put into a cage like anybody else. But it is the reaction, and I'm paralleling it to the reaction of the snapback reaction from 1920s Berlin into 1930s as they saw the rise of somebody with a steady hand that was going to address all of these perverts in Berlin, and it ended up being Hitler. Now, I can certainly see the real possibility of a left-wing dictator coming up. The left has gone full-on authoritarian. You cannot even speak out if you disagree with the left right now. They will try to censor you, cancel you, dox you, do whatever it takes to get rid of you. The left has gone full-on authoritarian. The problem is, I don't know that that would really fly in this country, because conservatives will always stand up to left-wing authoritarianism, but they won't stand up to right-wing authoritarianism. There's a whole lot of people out there who will find fault with me for being a little upset with Donald Trump for consulting with the communist dictator Xi Jinping about how to handle the drug war in the United States. There's a lot of people out there say, well, yeah, but, you know, death for the drug dealers, that sounds okay to me. And if you heard the clips from last week, what Trump said was short trials, you know, we put them to death, the drug dealers. There's a lot of conservatives out there that are down with that because you see a problem, you want your safety. It's the same way as firing somebody for not taking a vaccine. The left just hyperventilates about the dangers of COVID and immediately wants anybody just taken out of society if they won't accept the vaccine in their life. They're an existential threat to everybody. The left does the exact same thing with the war on drugs. And I don't think the left can get away with a dictator in this country because the right is so heavily armed and so suspicious and on guard for a left-wing authoritarian. Joe Biden is sticking his big fat toe into authoritarianism as we speak with his hiring of 89,000 new IRS agents. The right is wide awake to that. And whether it's Trump or somebody else, if the right wanted to put in somebody who went full-on authoritarian to address what are legitimate concerns, they'll just do it using draconian policies. I believe the right would stand down for that. That's why it's such a concern to me. I believe the left has more of a propensity towards authoritarianism. But if somebody on the right decided to roll it out, I believe they would have greater success at implementing it. Does that make sense? Because the only resistance towards authoritarianism in this country right now is the conservative, constitutional conservative. The problem is the constitutional conservatives stand down when authoritarianism comes from the right. They make excuses for it. Well, yes, we need to put drug dealers. We need to start stop and frisk again. We love it so much at the airport when the TSA pats us all down that we need to roll that out on the streets. We need to hire a bunch more cops that just pat down everybody who walks by in order to address this crime. You don't have to be accused of a crime, suspected of a crime. We just need to let the police roust you and rifle through your papers. Rifle through your pockets. See, conservatives are actually down with that. Many people are. And so in 1930s Germany or 1920s Germany, they were going through a lot of what we're going through right now. And the trend, what that led to is a little concerning. I'm just as concerned with the cultural war as anybody else. I've got kids. I may someday have grandchildren. This insanity needs to end. If you're out there fighting at the school board level, God love you. You're doing everybody a service, even those that won't get off the couch and help you. But I'm just telling you, just a little bit of a caution, a Harry Markopoulos warning to you. Be very careful on how authoritarian you want your leaders to get in response to this, lest we end up repeating 1930s Germany, not just 1920s. All right, only got a couple minutes left in this hour. We're going to come back. We're going to start looking. I don't know if anybody paid attention with all the headlines going on, but the CDC made some big, fat changes to the way we view COVID. But that doesn't mean that some of the worst ideas they had will not continue. But essentially, they went back to the way I started living back in, March? By the end of April of 2020. They've adopted what many of us decided to live our lives within about 4 weeks of the initial 2 weeks to slow the spread, and we realized how insane things were getting. The CDC now, 2.5 years later, is very quietly saying, yeah, we're just going to go to what you people have been doing for the last, 2 years and 4 months. So we'll talk about that. I want to talk on the financial side of things. I just ran across a chart this morning. There's actually a story from Wolf Richter. He's a financial analyst, does some very good work. I have a great deal of respect for him, but I ran across a story that said, no, we're not about to see a whole lot of car repossessions. This is a big story now as part of the part of the economic situation we're in right now. He has a chart of car repossessions and delinquencies. It is significantly off any kind of a record, but it is ticking up, and I would imagine it would continue, but it's not the catastrophe that I've been told it was so far. But he had a chart in this thing. Listen to this. I was talking with somebody this weekend about this guy who works at Nissan, actually. We were talking about the price of these new trucks and stuff coming out. It's amazing to me that people Ordinary people go out and buy an $85,000 truck like it's completely normal. That's not normal. He had a chart on here, the average transaction price of a new vehicle every year. Back in 2014, that average price was around $29,000, $30,000. In 2022, over $46,000. It's gone up more than 50%. That's the average transaction of an automobile. It's gone up by more than 50%. And as I said, that's notwithstanding some of these cars I see, these trucks. Now, if you're using a truck to make money, a lot of guys out there that use their trucks and work, I know a lot of people out there buying a recreational truck, $85,000 for a pickup truck. Maybe I'm showing my age, but I remember when a pickup truck was a utility vehicle. A lot of people had a car, and then they might use a pickup from time to time. No bells, no whistles. Now, they are fantastic. They're nice cars. I've been in some of these things. They are amazing vehicles, but $85,000 for a truck? These are the kinds of things that Americans do that makes it harder and harder to keep your head above water just in normal times. Not to say what's coming next. Be right back. Do I look lonely? I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing hooky. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. The CDC been making some changes, some noticed and some unnoticed. We'll talk about the unnoticed ones in a little bit here. Some kind of, I don't know, pretty underhanded, pretty important information that the CDC is changing without any really telling anybody this. As I've explained to everybody since the day I came on air, 5 years ago, the CDC and the FDA are vaccine and pharmaceutical sales organizations. They are not there to protect your health. I was well ahead of, Harry Markopoulos, the start of the show off, the whistleblower on the Bernie Madoff scandal. Nobody listened to him in 2001, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008. It turns out Bernie Madoff was running a Ponzi scheme. Well, the Mike Madison Show has been telling you about, warning you about the CDC and the FDA in 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. And around 2021, people understood, hey, wait a second. Did they just authorize an experimental shot to be given to our toddlers? Yes, the CDC and the FDA are pharmaceutical sales organizations posing as regulators or some kind of a protective force for the United States. So the CDC has been making some changes. We're going to get to some of the more public ones first. This was on the Today Show. I had to stop watching the Today Show. You know, I just wanted to wake up in the morning. I do a talk radio show dealing with current events and politics. I just wanted to wake up in the morning and see what was going on in the world. Just get a taste of it. The Today Show, I don't know. I think it might have been pre-COVID, but I'm sure I tried to tune in. Everybody was watching the news when COVID first broke out. They're so objectionable. They lie so horrifically, and boy, did they buy into the whole, fear-mongering. I can't watch them anymore. So maybe I am uninformed these days, but I did run across these clips from the Today Show, the CDC making some new recommendations now.
Also this morning, the COVID pandemic appears to be entering a new phase with the CDC's announcement of sweeping updates to its guidelines. They touch on everything from quarantining to masking. Joining us now to help break it all down, NBC's senior medical correspondent, Dr. John Torres.
We're going to go to the guy that's gotten everything wrong since the beginning of this outbreak to tell us what's going on now.
Always good to have you, sir.
Good morning.
So let's start with these new recommendations for quarantining. If you're exposed and you test positive, what's changed here and what's prompted the change?
So one of the biggest things that's changed is what happens if you're exposed and you don't test positive, because what they're saying right now is before they divided in between vaccinated and unvaccinated. Right. If you're unvaccinated, you had to go into quarantine. Well, they've dropped that. They put everybody on equal.
They have finally realized, kind of an admission without an admission. There's been a whole lot of admissions of failures without ever actually saying, oops, we failed. They just silently change these things. So now your vaccination status makes no difference whatsoever. That is an admission that we know the vaccines do not work.
Basis. And now they're saying if you're exposed, don't have symptoms, then go ahead and wear a mask out and about, but you want to wear a high-quality mask for 10 days. Test at day 5. If you test positive, then obviously you go ahead and go into isolation.
They're sticking with the masks, though.
If you test negative, continue to wear that well-fitting, high-quality mask.
Now, I love this, too. You're going to hear this several times through these clips. A high-quality, well-fitting mask. You know, they didn't even tell you that for the first 2 years. I don't know if that includes the people I've seen. If you notice, some people I see out of the grocery stores, even up to and including today, are wearing the bedazzled masks. Is that showing my age? Do they still offer the bedazzler? You know, this is kind of the rhinestone thing. Have you seen these people who have got the shimmy, sparkly stuff on their face masks? Certainly punching a bunch of rhinestones into a mask doesn't create any gaping holes for a virus to get through, but they're talking now about a high-quality, well-fitting mask. I ask you, if you're still wearing a mask, look at yourself in the mirror. 90% of the time, what you're wearing is not high-quality, and for the love of God, it's not well-fitting. I almost see nobody in anything even remotely approaching this. But for the last 2.5 years, they've told you, oh, a neck gaiter's fine, any kind of a cloth mask, just anything. Cross your mouth. Now they've got to say, oh, a well-fitting, high-quality mask.
For the next 5 days, but you don't have to quarantine anymore, vaccinated or unvaccinated.
Yeah, that's right, because the vaccine makes absolutely no difference. Although they do appreciate you participating in the experiment. Now, this is causing problems for the parents. What are they to do? I would imagine there are still parents out there who hang on every word that the CDC says. It doesn't matter that they've been wrong for 2.5 years on every single thing that they've said. A lot of people are still maybe waking up before their kids get up. What are we going to do today? Let's plan our day around the new CDC guidelines. I guess these people still exist, or maybe it's just the media trying to prop up the credibility of the CDC. Maybe, hopefully, nobody's listening to them, but I doubt that with all the face masks I still see at the grocery stores.
Dr. John, there's a lot of parents of little kids, I think us included, who might be confused with all this stuff coming and feeling like it contradicts what we might have heard before. What would you say to the parents?
What I would say is, you know, look at these new guidelines because they have changed for a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, we're 2.5 years into the pandemic, and the CDC is also saying 95% of us have some level of immunity, either from vaccines or prior infections. And so we're at that stage now where we can...
Wait, what? Prior infections? You mean... natural immunity? Is the CDC now and NBC Today Show now suddenly recognizing natural immunity? Because they certainly would have taken you off of Twitter just a few months ago had you uttered the terms natural immunity. What about natural immunity? Banned. Censored. And now suddenly...
is, you know, look at these new guidelines because they have changed for a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, we're 2.5 years into the pandemic, and the CDC is also saying 95% of us have some level of immunity, either from vaccines or prior infections. And so we're at that stage now where we can pull back a little bit. And for schools in particular, they're saying that the rules aren't quite the same they were before.
God, why does this guy want to kill the remaining 5% who have remained unvaccinated and uninfected? 5% of the U.S. population, what is that? 15 million people. Why do you want to kill them all? Isn't that kind of what we've been treated to for the last few years? Now they're going to continue, though, terrorizing our children when it comes to this thing. The one group that is statistically at zero risk of succumbing to any bad outcomes from COVID, they are going to continue to try to terrorize them, make sure they're conditioned before they become adults.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what is the CDC position now on masking in schools? A lot of kids started school this week. So what are the schools supposed to do?
So right now what they're saying is children in school only have to mask in certain situations. Number one, they're really emphasizing community levels. If there's a high community level and it's a high-risk activity, wrestling games, indoor concerts, those types of things, you want to wear a mask. Also in nurse's office because that's a healthcare setting and somebody could be sick there. But for the most part, you don't have to wear a mask. And if children are exposed, they no longer have to test to stay or stay home. They can go to school. As long as they wear a high-quality, well-fitting mask, and at day 5, they test.
All right.
So these nut jobs are still telling you, this mask that has made absolutely no difference whatsoever is dangerous to your children's health, dangerous to them psychologically, developmentally. They're still sticking with the mask there. They're saying that if your child is even exposed, if they encountered somebody who then tested positive for COVID or got the sniffles, then your child then has 10 days of masking ahead of them. Of course, well-fitting, high-quality mask. So these guidelines, as I said, what's interesting to me, essentially outside of the masking, which we knew very quickly. Now, I'll tell you, I'm no scientist. I'm no rocket surgeon. And when we first started talking about masks and stuff, it seems to make some, it makes some sense if you might expel something out of your mouth that has a disease, a virus in it, blocking that transmit, something between your mouth and another human being, or another human being and your mouth, seems on its face to at least maybe make a little bit of sense. And then it doesn't take long for anybody who's curious enough to understand the size of a viral particle that essentially it's like trying to hide from a shotgun blast behind a chain link fence, and that these things don't work, but they will, they're sticking to the fact that masks don't work. But outside of the masking, essentially the CDC is doing exactly what Mike Madison started doing in April of 2020, by the end of April, when I thought I had gotten sufficient really data showing us that this was mainly affecting very old people. If you had a good functioning immune system, you were very unlikely to suffer any bad outcomes. And so I and many people like myself, most probably most listeners to WYAB, we started going on with our lives as much as they would allow us to, as much as Tate Reeves and Thomas Dobbs would allow us to go on with our lives in 2020. We did that. If we didn't feel good, maybe we stayed home. Outside of that, that was it. Rest of life was back to normal. But don't think for a second that this means that they're about to let us back to normal life, that this is over. Because there are some pretty amazing things lining up. And it seems to me that we're just kicking off this disease theater. COVID might have only been the coming attractions, might have been the introduction to this stuff. Have you noticed all these diseases that are popping up all over the place? Guess what their solution is to every single one of these things? More shots. I'll show you what I'm talking about when we come back. Stick around.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain.
With every show, I end up with clips and stories. You wouldn't believe the amount of time I try to put into the order in which I do these things for what I believe to be, within my bizarro mind, maximum impact. I've been sitting here wrestling with, okay, what do I do next? How do I really flesh out this story? There's a lot of things here in the studio I'm doing that you just don't even understand what's going on in here. I don't know if it's effective or not, but they're not done with us. This is the, as much as you can understand, this Bond villain. There's so many, you know, seriously, I've been trying to, you know, I told you about LARPing a couple of weeks ago, that the world has just been taken over by LARPers. They're not accomplished. They're not impressive people. They somehow have bought their way into these high positions, and they're just play acting what they want to be. Joe Biden is not capable of being president. He's not an impressive man. His record is horrific. He's corrupt. He's just like, he decided he wanted to play president, and we have to all somehow acknowledge this. It's very strange. When it comes to the LARPing, you look at Klaus Schwab and his Bond villain voice. Well, the head guy, what's this? I can't remember the guy's name. He's over at Moderna, and he's got another Bond villain voice himself. This is the head of Moderna. They're talking about he's gonna tell you what the shots are gonna do. Going forward, how they're going to look at them. I got to tell you, it's one of these comparisons that creeps me out a little bit.
Future of the COVID vaccine to look like for adults when it comes to schedule, dosage, makeup. You know, you mentioned basically that you're looking to make sure that folks are protected against multiple different strains, multiple viruses, right?
There are around 10 viruses that circulate in the world. Some of them mutate fast, like flu or COVID, some don't. We think we can put in a single product a lot of mRNAs taking care of all those viruses.
Oh, if you can not understand him, he says there's about 10 viruses out there that we really, you know, some of them mutate fast, some of them mutate slow, but we believe we can put within one shot, we can put together all these different mRNAs all into one jab for you. I don't know what the what all 10 viruses he plans to address, but this is what they're thinking. It's so amazing, and we're going to talk about this mRNA in just a second, that this has been such a monumental swing and a miss and dangerous, incredibly dangerous, the most dangerous shot program that has ever been rolled out on humanity in the history of our species. They refuse to admit that. But it's also been a monumental failure. And I've got some statistics from the National Health Services in Great Britain. Again, we have to travel over a great ocean to try to find any real statistics that are showing that these things are dangerous. But this has been one giant failure in the vaccine program. But now they're going to start using this mRNA for everything. It is something to behold. It's just, none of the facts matter. We started on mRNA. We're going to declare it a victory no matter what is actually happening. We're going to declare it safe and disregard all of the dangers of these things. More about that in just a second. I'll tell you the National Health Service's numbers. And we're just going to start using it for everything now. All of your shots, 10 diseases rolled into one in one shot. How often are we going to have to get it?
And that's once a year you should be able to get an annual booster, single dose, that has in the vial all those mRNAs for all those viruses that are, of course, adapted to the strain of a season, like flu, like COVID strain and so on. And the idea is a bit like the iPhone, where, as you know, a lot of us buy a new iPhone every second.
He's saying the iPhone, if you can't get this. It's going to be like the iPhone. It's just we're going to update you every year with all these new mRNAs.
Adapted to the strain of a season, like flu, like COVID strain and so on. And the idea is a bit like the iPhone, where, as you know, a lot of us buy a new iPhone every September.
No, a lot of us do not buy a new $1,000 phone every September. This is, again, the elites are so out of touch. I only update my phones when I cannot get another minute's time out of my old one. I think I'm on 3 years right now on mine. Anyway.
Get new apps and you get refreshed apps. And that's exactly the same idea, which is you'll get COVID and flu and RSV in your single dose, and you'll get what's the best science of the moment to protect you for the strain circulating now and in the fall, winter. So we can combine all those things and provide to people around the world the annual booster, so only one shot.
So just one shot a year. It's going to have mRNAs for 10 different diseases all commingled in there. Now, of course, they have not done any testing of anything even similar to this, but this is already, I guess, the plan. This was very interesting. The CDC. This is on the CDC's website today versus what was on it not that long ago. I'm going to read to you from the CDC's own website. Let me see if I've got dates on these. This is from July 21st, not that long ago. July 21st on the CDC website, it says facts about mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. And this is a whole piece. It's their COVID-19 page, the mRNA vaccines page. It's got all kinds of little sections in here, what you need to know, how mRNA COVID-19 vaccines work. And then it gets down to facts about mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. On July 21st, it was the facts about mRNA COVID-19 vaccines were this. They had three points that they wanted to give you, facts about these shots. The first one was mRNA COVID-19 vaccines cannot give someone COVID-19 or other illnesses. The second one is they do not affect or interact with our DNA. And the third one was the mRNA and the spike protein do not last long in the body. Those are the three bullet points underneath facts about mRNA COVID-19 vaccines on July 21st. As of today, the facts about mRNA COVID-19 vaccines are mRNA COVID-19 vaccines cannot give someone a COVID-19 or other illnesses. The next one is they do not affect or interact with our DNA. And the third one is missing. They have silently removed this bullet point here. The mRNA and spike protein do not last long in the body. Underneath which, on July 21st, it said our cells break down mRNA from these vaccines and get rid of it within a few days after vaccination. Scientists estimate that the spike protein, like other proteins our bodies create, may stay in the body up to a few weeks. They have taken all of that away. They no longer tell you that the mRNA and the spike protein do not last long in the body. Did they get some research showing that this thing is still circulating? The toxic part of COVID-19, the part of COVID-19 that did all the damage, the spike protein. Did they do some research and find out that this thing is still in people's bodies? after they get vaccinated, months, years after they take these shots. To make sure you understand what I'm saying, they've taken this off. They used to say the mRNA and the spike protein do not last long in the body. They have removed that for some strange reason. There's not an explanation there on the site that I can see. It does not say, edit, we have found that. New data shows that. No, they just took it off the site. So those of you that have the shot that were told, hey, we're going to inject you with this thing, spike protein is going to go in, it's going to teach your immune system how to treat a spike protein, and then it's going to go on its merry way and just set you up for success going forward. You might want to contact the CDC and ask them, is this spike protein the toxic part of COVID-19? Is that thing still in me? Because it appears you're saying that it is. When I come back, we're going to talk about some of these other shots. Look, I don't know what's causing all these other diseases to seemingly pop up out of nowhere. It could be just disease theater, right? They found the fear-mongering around COVID was so successful and so profitable, profitable for the hospitals, profitable for the doctors, profitable for the pharmaceutical companies. A lot of people made a lot of money off COVID-19, so this just may be opportunism. Because we know, anybody who's lived for any period of time, we know that every year or so something pops up, SARS, MERS, Ebola, something pops up, Zika. You know, there's always something popping up. It just seems like it's like whack-a-mole these days. We got monkeypox, and now we've got polio. Polio that had been eradicated from this country. So is it just more fear-mongering? Because I'll play some of these clips. That's definitely a possibility. Or is it that these shots that they've been giving people have been destroying our immune system? Now we are so much more susceptible to diseases that we were fighting off right and left before. Diseases are always floating around. But the human immune system is just an absolute miracle. And it's been knocking these things down. But maybe now these things are taking hold because people have damaged their immune systems so dramatically with these shots. They'll never actually look at these things, and I don't know that's the case. As I said, it could just be disease theater, opportunism, and profit-taking that could be doing it. But boy, they are rolling out disease after disease on us, and you hear the guy from Moderna, he's trying to roll up 10 different viruses into one vial to give it to you. And remember, they are an mRNA vaccine, and now the CDC apparently is silently admitting they have no idea how long that stuff's going to stay in your body, these spike proteins from this mRNA. This is amazing to watch and think that nobody's really talking about this outside of the alternative media. Well, NWIAB. I'll be right back. Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIAB. Thanks for joining me. This shot program, this mRNA experiment on the human race is just a rolling disaster. I'm going to tell you the statistics on childhood vaccines from the National Health Services in a little while. As I say, you've got to go overseas to try to get any real numbers, any real data. They do everything they can to shield us from any truth here in the United States. There are a few truth tellers out there. So there's all these other diseases popping up. Monkeypox was the next one we've been treated to. This one seems to be targeted towards the gay community, which it's really feeling kind of under attack now. Now, they've got a clip about that. I've been trying to play for probably about 2 weeks now from a lesbian woman who realizes that the agenda has moved past them and now they're being sidelined. But maybe they're trying to kill them as well. This is one of the few guys who has gotten a bunch of things right, been a truth teller out there, and that's Peter McCullough. Listen to what the side effect of the monkeypox vaccine is that people are lining up for. No, come on, there we go.
Shockingly, when the monkeypox story started to evolve, we heard a report that the U.S. government had actually purchased 13 million doses of the Jynneos vaccine.
Cha-ching, cha-ching. All the vaccine makers are getting up to the trough.
The Jynneos vaccine. So wait a minute. The Jynneos vaccine was coming along in 2018, 2019. And in fact, this is a live attenuated vaccine. And with it, in a study of over 3,003 people in the package insert, you know what the trouble is? Myocarditis or heart inflammation. And now there is already reports of heart inflammation with this vaccine. Keneth and colleagues reported in 2018 heart damage with the product in a young man aged 36. Now, the interesting thing is clinically, Dell, the people who are at risk for dying are young individuals with HIV. We can't use live attenuated viruses in people with HIV because they're immunocompromised.
Holy cow, there's just another disaster unfolding, isn't it? I mean, what is going on? I guess the only thing to say is, parents out there, get your kids to be cardiologists. If you want some job security going forward, apparently cardiology is going to be the way to go with all of these different things. Here's another one. Now we're seeing polio. Polio is now making a rise. I played this clip for you on Friday in This Week on the Crazy Train. So what is going to be the big push now that polio is appearing in wastewater places? They're saying, oh my gosh, we got polio. We thought we had beat it. Now, I have not been able to go back and do the research yet. To be honest with you, I just hadn't taken the time. There have been some countries where it has been reported that they have had polio outbreaks, and almost every single one of them were prompted by the vaccination program for polio. What they were finding is that people were being stricken with the vaccine strain of polio. Now, I don't know if that's what's going on here or not, or if we have just destroyed our immune systems with these mRNA shots. What would be so beautiful is to see all of these different things. Who is suffering from monkeypox? Are they the people who got the mRNA shot, and so their immune system has been so depressed that now they are open to this monkeypox infection? Now, we know this is largely transmitted through gay sex. I don't really say it that way, but that's obviously what's happening. But are the people who are contracting monkeypox, it sure would be great to know whether or not they were vaccinated for COVID, if they've undergone this genetic experiment using the mRNA vaccines that appear to really damage your immune system, particularly the more shots that you get. I would similarly like to see the same thing. People who are testing positive for polio now, are they vaccinated or not for COVID? Not for polio, but for COVID. Is that what's happening? We don't really know, but there's a solution to our polio problem, just like every other problem.
Public health officials are warning the presence of poliovirus in New York City's wastewater means the disease is likely circulating locally. They're urging those unvaccinated to get immunized immediately.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Do you see the number of shots that's stacking up on us here? I mean, we're going to have to go every week for a different shot. Within a couple of years, they keep rolling out these diseases. How many shots for the polio protection that we need?
In New York City, 86% of kids 5 and under have received 3 doses of the vaccine. But in some areas, that number drops below 60%. This comes just 3 weeks after a man was paralyzed with polio in Rockland County, New York, the U.S.'s first case in 9 years. Officials fear hundreds could be infected. The likely culprit, vaccine hesitance.
Of course. There it is again. It's every problem that we have, according to the mainstream media and our medical establishment, is always the problem of the unvaccinated. As I told you, you can look this up. Just do an internet search for polio outbreak tied to vaccine. And you will find that it is these vaccines that leak or whatever the mechanism is that actually releases polio into communities. Just about, I think, every outbreak that I've seen over the past few years where polio has broken out, it has been from the vaccination program. The strain of polio that finds its way into people and actually damages them is the strain that's introduced into the population through the vaccination program. You can look these things up. I believe it was the Bill Gates group, the Gates Foundation, that was kicked out of, was it India? And I don't want to say the numbers here because the number that's coming to my mind is 400,000 people. In India, they got a lot of people over there. That's entirely possible. But I don't want to be tied down to that. I'll research it. But they basically kicked the Gates group out of India when people started coming down with polio after the vaccination program.
Polio vaccination rate in Rockland County is just 60% compared to the nearly 79% statewide. Polio used to disable thousands, mostly children, each year, but was largely eradicated in America through mass vaccination programs starting in the 1950s. Doctors say people need to be proactive.
Now, I will say this, too. because I can't help myself. There is a lot of information out there that people who talk, and I'm not here to say the polio vaccine might not have been. I don't want to be, you know, one of the problems is that if you point real things out and they have a trend, you know, you're labeled an anti-vaxxer. Oh, you can't even give us the polio vaccine. Well, the truth of the matter is that polio was almost eradicated. I mean, it's almost gone when the polio vaccine came out. I mean, you can look these things up. I've seen the charts of when the polio vaccine was introduced and the trend in polio at the time. It was going away. I'm not saying the vaccine maybe didn't hasten its complete demise. I'm no expert on the polio vaccine. All I'm saying is this idea that the only way out of any of these things every time is going to be more shots. And if you don't take the shots, you're the one that causes all the problems. I mean, the facts do not bolster this point every time.
But was largely eradicated in America through mass vaccination programs starting in the 1950s. Doctors say people need to be proactive about making sure it doesn't spread.
If we can go back to having very, very high standards with regard to making sure that people are vaccinated and making sure that the immunization rates are better, that's our best method of protection.
And most people who get polio do not have visible symptoms. About one in four, though, develop flu-like symptoms, including fevers, fatigue, and headaches. And according to the CDC, about one in 200 polio infections leads to paralysis.
So we're treated to this. As I say, I would really like to know everybody who's being affected by monkeypox, everybody who's being affected by polio, everybody who's going to be affected by the next disease will be treated to, I would imagine, within the next 3 or 4 weeks. Because these things keep popping up. I would certainly like to know the COVID-19 vaccine status for this, because the people that have been speaking out against these vaccines have said it is going to damage your immune system. We started talking about this here on my show, and I think basically across all talk shows here on WYAB, pointing to these scientists who were saying, hey, they did these tests on these mRNA vaccines. They found that you got a strong antibody response once you took these shots, but then you were wildly more susceptible to bad outcomes once a wild virus came around. Antibody-dependent enhancement. ADE. I don't know when we first started talking about this, but it was when these scientists, these McCulloughs and Robert Malone and Del Bigtree, all of these people that were pointing to these studies that showed that the mRNA vaccines, when they were tested on animals, damaged their immune systems. And suddenly we're seeing all of these new diseases, and their prescription for it is more shots. Some people aren't taking it. And I really wonder, you know, as I read that thing about the CDC taking off, that the mRNA leaves your body within a matter of days or weeks. They just removed that from the website. I really find myself wondering, are there doctors out there who are just saying, what in the hell did they just do to us? They just got us to put our credibility on the line. They told us to go out here and pimp for these vaccines to all of our patients, to our teenagers, and now our toddlers. And now they're just quietly behind the scenes saying, oh, this spike protein, it may last in your body for a long time. The toxic part, the dangerous part about COVID-19, the spike protein. This thing may continue in your body. We don't know how long it's going to last. I mean, they just quietly took this off of their website. Are there doctors out there who say, oh, my God, you destroyed my credibility. You told me the data was in. You told us how it was going to work. I told my patients, we're going to put this in your arm. It's going to stay in your shoulder just for a couple of days. Then we found out, no, it travels throughout the entire body, and a lot of people lodges in the pancreas and in the heart and everywhere else. This thing travels. Now they're just saying, well, I guess the spike protein sticks around for a while. We have no idea how long it stays. Maybe person by person, we have no earthly idea. Are doctors not just furious about how badly they have been misled by the CDC, by Fauci, by Dobbs, by all of these people? Because it is the doctor on the front line that has been looking patients straight in the eyes and telling them this thing's safe and effective. This thing will keep you from getting COVID. They told you that. Pediatricians told you that. Then they told you, well, it's going to keep you from any serious outcomes. And they found out that's not true. I mean, doctors have been out there on the front lines with their patients, interacting on a person-to-person basis, propagating these mistruths, or at the very least, statements that the CDC and the FDA, they could not back up. There was no data for these things. They were words just said, and the doctors are the ones on the front line putting their credibility on the lines with their patients, and it turns out they were wrong. Wrong, wronger, and wrongest. Some doctors are speaking out found this clip, Dr. William Bay. He's an Australian doctor, and they have their own AMA down there. I guess that's the Australian Medical Association. Well, he spoke to the AMA down in Australia, and I guess he's not very happy with the fact that they've lied to him.
Omar, I'm sorry. My colleagues of the AMA, my name is Dr. William Bay, and I'm a GP registrar, and I'm here today to ask you to join with the people of Australia and stop forcing these vaccines on people who are getting killed by them. Dr. Professor Paul Kelly is a liar. He is gaslighting all of you. And there is only a 0.27% fatality rate with the infection. And natural immunity has been proven recently in a Qatar study that it gives you 97.3% immunity for life against all variants. All GPs, all doctors of Australia, you are on notice by the people of Queensland. This is the Queensland people's protest, and you have been warned.
Whoa. Oh, you have been warned. That should be the I may have to cut that out of that and make that part of the end of my show every day. You have been warned. So this is one doctor who realizes he got hoodwinked and gaslit by the medical association down there in Australia. I wonder if we're going to start seeing these out of American doctors. When I come back, we should see that out of British doctors soon. Wait till you get a load of the National Health Service's statistics on COVID shots and the kids over in Great Britain. As I say, we got to travel a long way to get any transparency. We'll go to England next. Stick around. All right, final few minutes of the show here. Let me see if I can do this justice. I really might need to keep this to another show. These stories are from globalresearch.ca, globalresearch.ca. Big fan of this website. It's very serious, very wonky stuff. They do a lot of foreign policy stuff where they kind of got on my radar. It's a Canadian operation. But they are part of the alternate press out there, and they will report report what's actually happening. This is let me pull this screen down so I can flesh out this screen a little bit here. Again, I might need to give this a little bit more time at some other point. But there are people out there. I'll go ahead and tell you now, if you are considering, if you got a pediatrician that is really prompting you to give your kids these shots, this is something you might want to look into. And it would be a very interesting conversation to have with your pediatrician to know if they've seen these statistics from the UK government, not from Alex Jones, not from Mike Madison. This is National Health Service's statistics from England. This is from globalresearch.ca. Shocking figures contained in an official report published just hours before the Boris Johnson announced his resignation as Prime Minister of the UK, which assured that this would get absolutely no press because obviously the resignation of their Prime Minister took all the oxygen in the room. These documents reveal COVID-19 vaccinated children are 4,423% or 45 times more likely to die of any cause than unvaccinated children, and 13,633 or 137 times more likely to die of COVID than unvaccinated children. Let me read that to you again. These are National Health Service statistics out of the UK government. Says that COVID vaccinated children are 45 times more likely to die of any cause than unvaccinated children, and 137 times more likely to die of COVID-19 than unvaccinated children. Now, this thing goes into the charts and all kinds of stuff. This is the things that come out, and you can see it's certainly with every dose, the outcomes seem to get worse. Now, when they talk about all-cause mortality, you know, I don't know exactly what is considered in that. Let me put it this way. I don't know the percentage of children who have gotten the shots and what these all-cause mortalities are. Some of those things, you know, there can be some devil in those details a little bit. I'm not saying this isn't catastrophic news that shouldn't be concerning to everybody, because we know people are dying out there and doctors and the medical establishment are refusing to tie it to the shots. They will look a patient in the eyes. They come in with paralyzed legs or, you know, crippling symptoms, and the doctors will look them right in the eyes and go, oh, we think it's just, I think it's just, you're making it up. We're going to send you to a psych ward. They refuse to see the connection between these shots, these genetic therapies, and poor outcomes. But the more telling one is the kids who have had the shots for COVID are 137 times more likely to die from COVID. Now, the numbers, I'm sure, are very small. Kids are not really affected by COVID. So if it's one kid that's unvaccinated that dies from COVID and 137 kids who die from COVID after being vaccinated, that may be where the statistic is. These numbers are very small when it comes to kids. All I'm saying is this would be an interesting conversation with a pediatrician to get these National Health Services numbers to them and say, are you really sure? Are you super duper sure with no testing on our kids, no long-term safety data, but even the short-term data that's coming in from England, are you really sure that you should be inoculating your patient population in your pediatrician's office with these shots? Yeah, these statistics, I'm going to keep looking at them. I'm sure we'll bring them up again. That's all the time I got today. Got to say,
no matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.